you know, very, very challenging times. And we wake up, you know, on days when they literally, you know, you think you can't be shocked anymore. And then, you know, one detail jumped out of me this week, you know, that they've literally turned the maternity ward. You know, it's okay. I'm used to the idea that they've militarized the hospital as a terror fortress, but somehow the maternity ward, you know, maybe it's because we have young children, so it's still a very fresh memory for me. The maternity ward has a certain special sanctity within the hospital, you know, and now that the maternity ward in Al-Shifa Hospital is like, you know, Hamas's central firing zone, you know, it really is an amazing thing, you know, for that could be going on in the same day as Israel gets censured in the Security Council. So for all of us, it's a very disorienting experience. And you know, it's not new at this point. We've been at it for many months. But it's worth mentioning because, you know, we have this tradition of Lulei Sarascha Shashuaya Zavati Ba'anye, that learning Torah is a way of, you know, really restoring ourselves and restoring our strength to be able to confront the many things around us. So I know that I look to this as very much an oasis in time during the calendar, dealing with all of the other challenges that we're facing. So 12:30 on Thursdays, you know, for me, becomes an opportunity to really draw the spiritual sustenance that I know that I need, you know, to confront the world as it is around us. Torah Hashem Tamima Mishivas Nafesh, that it restores our souls, especially in such a dark time. What I want to focus on today may seem on the face like...
Rabbi Friedman, can I interrupt for one
please.
Second? Just to share something on the flip side, which probably other people have seen, is that the community of Shlomit returned as a community to their town. Oh, and funny. Like, as opposed to using a maternity ward for, you know, for a terror base, one of the first things they opened was the daycare center. One of the first things they're building.
Can you send me
because
pictures?
That's like, we, you know, that's the answer to everything. And they were interviewing. There were four widows, 12 orphans there, you know. You want me to send you?
Anything.
I didn't even hear about that. That's interesting.
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
I saw it. And they had a whole parade, you know. Returning to, you know,
do you have videos? Do you have videos of that?
I'll find it. I saw it on, you know, who knows where. I'm always looking at different things.
Please,
sure.
Because I would want to show that to my kids also. That's because it's very important. It's so important, and it's beautiful,
right.
And it sanctifies. Yep. It sanctifies life.
Yep.
And I really appreciate you sharing that. And the contrast, the light and the darkness, right? It's like, you know, just doesn't get any more real.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But I will find that for you. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so maybe now that's actually the perfect time. Because what I wanted to talk about from the Parsha is actually the Korban Todah. And I was about to say, you know, it may seem like a time where who has what to be thankful for, but now I have plenty to be thankful for the community of Shlomit. But the truth is, I wanted to talk about the Korban Todah because I think that it's exactly what we need to be thinking about right now, is the Korban Todah as an institution is really one of the most fascinating areas of Korbanos. So let me just describe the basic situation and then we'll get into detail. So the Korban Todah is mandated, let's put it in the most general terms right now, when somebody's had a life-threatening danger. It could be an illness. It could be something related to travel, as we'll discuss, or they were like incarcerated. At times of the Mishnah and the Gemara, to be incarcerated was like to be in very close to, you know, captivity. Lo aleinu. You know, when people are released from Hamas captivity, they say Birchas Hagomel if they're aware of saying it. You know, we're talking about a life-threatening situation. And you might wonder, like, what is this all about? Like, I should be thankful that I had this horrible experience and I emerged, you know, with my life. It's true, but, you know, a person could turn around, and again, this is exactly what I want to talk about, and to say, okay, great, so I survived, you know, we shouldn't know from it, metastatic breast cancer. And you want me to bring a Korban Todah? Maybe I have very different feelings about it. Maybe my feeling is that I wish that I hadn't had that confrontation with mortality altogether. So the Korban Todah is this, you know, totally fascinating Korban. We're going to get to the details, the nitty-gritty details, which are important. But I'm just saying, the most basic question about the Korban Todah really maintains to the very Korban itself. Like, you know, again, and different people are different. There are some people who would say, yeah, it's obvious. If I survive this, I should be grateful. And today, you know, there's a minhag of making a Sudas Hoda'ah. And we could, well, again, we'll talk about the modern day iteration of Birchas HaGomel, but there are other people who would say, I prefer, you know, let me skip the Korban and let me skip the party and let me skip the, the very unpleasant road that I had to travel to get there. So, that's what I want to focus on in terms of the macro question here. And then also, as we'll document some of the really interesting details. So let me just begin by introducing a kind of an anomaly. When it comes to the realm of Korbanos, there's like a pretty bright red line distinction between what we call Kadshei Kadashim, the most sacred of the Korbanos. So the Korban Ola is very much at the top of that list. Then we have the Korban Mincha, the flower version of that. There are many different kinds of menachos, and then we have the chatas and the asham, two kinds of sin offerings, and something called zivchei shalmei tzibor, public shlamim offerings. Okay, then we have what's called kadshim kalim, a much lower level of korban, can be eaten by even people who aren't kohanim, it can be eaten throughout the city of Yerushalayim. There's a lot of flexibility, and the most standard version of that is known to everybody here, called the Korban Shlamim. We've all heard of the Korban Shlamim, and there just seems to be like a much greater degree of flexibility there than we find with respect to Kadshei Kadashim. So just to give, a very concrete example, so Korban Ola always has to be a Zachar, okay? Always has to be a male animal. And a Korban Chatas, which is also Kadshei Kadashim, almost always has to be a nekeva. Like, you don't really get to choose. In the exceptional cases, the Torah, mandates that. But when it comes to Korban Shlamim, Zachar o nekeva, you have, like, all of this, flexibility. I wouldn't say it's exactly laissez-faire. You can't take it out of Yerushalayim. You can't eat it if you're Tameh or if you're in Aninos. But, there's just, much greater flexibility. Not only that, but typically, it can be consumed, for a relatively long period of time, certainly in the world of Kachim, which is 2 days and one night. Shnei Yamim of Laila Echad, or Laila Achas. So you have much more time to eat it, whereas amongst the Kadshei Kadashim that can be eaten, not all of them can be eaten. So, for example, the Korban Ola can't be eaten because everything is consumed in the Mizbeach, and there's the Minchas Kohen, which can't be eaten. It's Khalil Toktar, it's all goes up on the Mizbeach. So let's say if you have a Chatas or an Asham, the Kohanim eat a portion of it. There's things that go on the Mizbeach as well, but they're only allowed to, the Kohanim, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Azara, and only Yom Valayla. And that Yom Valayla isn't really a whole night, but we have an Issur d'Rabbanan after Chatzos, very important distinction. We don't have that, as the Meshech Chachma points out, by Kachem Kalim. You don't have Shnei Yamim V'lai Lechad. You don't have any Gezeira on the back end. You can eat it all the way up until Shkia, until sunset of the second day. So the Korban Todah is really interesting. It's a subcategory of a Shlamim. It's Kachem Kalim. It can be eaten by non-Kohanim anywhere in Yerushalayim, but it has an aspect of Kadshei Kadashim. And that aspect is the time frame. A Korban Todah is Nechal Liyom Valayla. So it has the same time frame as Kadshei Kadashim in terms of a Korban that can be eaten. So just to pause and think about that for a second, what the Torah is sending us is a very important message. That if there are two categories of korbanos, Kadshei Kadashim, the Ola, the Chatas, the Asham, the Minchah, and Kachem Kalim down here, Korban Todah is really somewhere in the middle. The Korban Todah distinguishes itself. The Korban Todah has an additional aspect of Kedusha to it. Anomaly number one. anomaly number two. So typically a korban shlamim is an animal. Like we said, it could be a male, it could be a female, zachar or nikeva. A person can volunteer a korban shlamim. It's a very beautiful thing to do. Sometimes the Torah requires it, like on regalim. There's something called korban chagiga, shalmei chagiga, also something called shalmei simcha. So sometimes the Torah requires it. Very often a person can volunteer and say, I'd like to bring a korban shlamim. Actually, when the Jewish people were traveling in the Midbar, if they wanted to have meat, they had to bring a korban shlamim. So there's greater flexibility after we got to the land of Israel. Right? So the voluntary aspect is very, you know, pronounced. But the korban toda isn't voluntary. A person doesn't have the option, we'll go through the cases in just a little bit, but if a person has one of these experiences, they were really in a sakana. So it's not a matter of discretion. They're obligated to bring a korban toda. It doesn't say, okay, you can if you want to. So that aspect of chiyuv also differentiates it from standard shlamim. A third point of distinction, we'll have four because we are getting closer to Pesach, so we want to keep that motif, is that typically when it comes to personal shlamim, we're just talking about an animal. And again, it could be a male animal, it could be a female animal. And like other korbanos, so when the korban is offered, depending on what kind of an animal it is, so it has the libations, it has nesachim, it has a certain, secondary flower offering, there are menachos, but that's basically the point. You have the animal, and it's offered as a korban. The korban toda carries with it a huge secondary offering. 40 bread elements. 40. It's a lot. And they're all made in different ways. Chalos, rekikin, revuchin. And the last one, which I'll hold off for now. You have 10 of each variety. It's a baker's paradise. And just so that you don't think that they're disconnected, the halacha dictates that the lechem is only niskadesh kedusha saguf. It only actually becomes sanctified when the animal is offered. So the animal is this triggering effect for spreading the sanctity to the breads. Now I want to just make a slight editorial comment. When I got married, my wife taught me that baking is harder than cooking. Why? She said, cooking, you can patchki around, meaning, it says this in the recipe, but if you really know what you're doing, you can make additions and subtractions. You can put your own interpretation on it. Not if you want it to be exactly the way that your mother made it, but you have some flexibility. Baking, my wife told me, that is a recipe for disaster. You start to tinker when you're baking, so you're going to have something inedible, okay? So that's what I learned. So this idea, once my wife explained it to me, and you can imagine, I aside from scrambled eggs and noodles and a few soups, cooking I'm not involved in, kol shekein the baking. Okay, once my wife explained that to me, I decided, I would certainly not try. Actually, interestingly, the kids, she's taught the kids how to bake, so they're, I'm like the only one left in the house that doesn't know. But that actually is a very good summation of the Beis HaMikdash. It actually works exactly the same way. with the exception of the Korban Pesach, which has to be roasted, you really have a pretty high degree of flexibility in terms of how you cook the basar of korbanos. We know that the Korban Pesach, there's a special halacha of tzliyesh. Al sochlu menuna, vashal mevushal. But when it comes to baking, there are very strict rules in the Beis HaMikdash. In particular, lo se'afech chametz. Right? There's a year-round restriction, not just on Pesach, against bringing any chametz onto the Mizbeach or baking anything into chametz in the Beis HaMikdash. With very, very, very limited exceptions. Anybody want to guess? Maybe the most prominent exception? The Korban Todah. So the Korban Todah doesn't just have this massive baking element, but the baking element is totally distinctive. It's unique. Because 10 of the 40 loaves are actually chametz. Al chalos lechem chametz, yavi korbano al zevach todah shlamav. The Ramban points out that of the 40 loaves of bread, the 10 most important by far are the chametz. Because in terms of the volume of material which is used, of eggs, so there are three times the amount that go into the chametz products than go into the matzah products. So even though there are 30 matzah, 10 of each variety, 10 of each variety, so 30 matzah elements and only 10 chametz elements, the 10 chametz elements are three times the size of the matzah elements. So this is like, you know, a chametz party. And some people make chametz parties before Pesach, some people make chametz parties after Pesach. So the Korban Todah is like a chametz party. So just to review, the Korban Todah is like this fascinating and enigmatic Korban. Number one, the very institution. People are different, but not everybody feels like bringing a Korban Todah when they've had a near-death experience. Some people do. Some people might be a little bit frustrated that they had to endure that. Everybody's very different. I don't think I would need to tell you. You know, when it comes to people, like I said, who have gone through a very, very serious illness, and whether or not they want to, you know, do something after that experience is an extremely personal decision. You know, we've all probably attended a Sudas Hodaya, but we've all been in situations where the person didn't really feel like that would be the right thing for them, and it's not the kind of thing that you push people into, you know, against their will. So the fact that the Torah says this is mandated, that to me is the overarching fascinating question. And then again, once you get down into the details, so we explained that in terms of the eating time frame, it's not just a detail, but it's an indication that it really is somewhere between the world of Kadshei Kadashim and Kadshim Kalim. It's a Shlamim, it's Kadshim Kalim, but it has dimensions of Kadshei Kadashim. It has an aspect of that to it. And second of all, unlike the vast majority of personal Shlamim, of Shalmei Yachid, it is indeed mandatory. Right? We don't find any volition. Number three, the Lechem. Both the matzah, you know, and the chametz, but the huge quantity, the kedushas haguf, which is triggered by, you know, the zevichas habehema, and then the role of chametz. All of this makes for an amazing study into a korban that, you know, is really unlike any other. So that's the framework. You know, some people, especially this week, they'll say, like, you know, the parah aduma is the most enigmatic thing in the Torah. Sometimes I want to say, you know, when we have the rare configuration of Parshas Tzav Parah, because usually Tzav is HaGadol, that, you know, when the Shana Mu'baris comes and they say, you know, it's Parshas Tzav Parah, I say, you know, there's an argument to be made that the Korban Todah might be more enigmatic than the Parah Aduma, but you know, we'll leave that debate for another time. The Gemara, let me just share my screen. Okay. So let me begin with the Gemara. Okay, so Gemara talks about the obligation of Korban Todah, which then, you know, in modern day terms, because we can't offer korbanos anymore, you know, becomes the paradigm for Birchas HaGomel. So Amar Yehuda Merav, Arba Tzrichin Lehodos. Yardei Hayam, right, people who go to sea. Holchei Midbaros, people who, you know, are sojourning through the desert. Misha Hayacholev and Isrape, people, we're not talking about colds or, you know, sinus infections here. Mishahaya chavush beveis hasur v'yatza. So the Gemara goes through an entire derivation based on the Mizmor Tehillim, which, you know, always has the same pasuk, which has been included in the prayer that we're, I think, probably all saying every Shabbos for the hostages. Yodu ladunai chasdo v'niflosav l'vnei adam. Right, that's why that pasuk is included there, because, as I mentioned before, chavush. And there's a chiyuv of Berchas HaGomel for somebody who was, you know, held hostage. Okay, so the Gemara says, you know, in today's day and age, this is five lines from the bottom, my mevorich. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Baruch Gomel Chasadim Tovim. So we have a different girsa based on the Vilna Gaon's comment in the Gemara. HaGomel L'chayavim Tovim. Not just Gomel Chasadim Tovim, but that in some sense we were, you know, found guilty and, you know, God, you know, exonerated us. More on that a little bit later. So Abai Amar, V'tzarech lo duye kame asara. Really, we should have a minyan. This kind of became the basis of the practice. If people do it at a Kriyas HaTorah, right? Dechsiv yomru bekal am. Marzutra Amar, interestingly, who trained minayhu rabbana. There should be two rabbis there. Shenemar v'moshav zekenim yahaluhu. So maskevle Ravashi v'ema kulu rabbanon. Maybe it should really be that there are everybody's rabbi there. Miksiv bikal zekenim, bikal am ksiv. So Gemara says, but it doesn't say that everybody there has to be a zaken, has to be a rabbi. So ema be asara sharama utrei rabbanon. So maybe it should be 10 plus 2. So Gemara says kasha. So there's some discussion of this, you know, requirement for two rabbis. The common minhag is just to do it in shul, you know, and not to necessarily insist on having the two rabbis there, but I do want to discuss that. So the Ra'ah, one of the great Chachmei Sfarad, comments on the Gemara, Nuhukil Ruche al Kriyas HaTorah, right? The common minhag is to do it in the context of Kriyas HaTorah, right? Anybody here, by the way, just by a show of hands, say Berchas HaGomel maybe after having a child? Anybody here have that practice? Okay, so Bonnie, Jerry, okay. So that's always, to me, an extremely meaningful moment in shul when that happens, when the women do that. You know, it's a very beautiful, but again...
Unfortunately, it was my husband that did it, so it should have been me, but yeah.
Right. Yeah, but just, sorry, just in fairness, you know, a lot of women, you know, after being, you know, 3 days, you know, 5 day, whatever it is, postpartum, it's just very hard to get out to shul. You know, it's not so easy. It's always exceptionally moving when it happens, but, you know, you can't really impose it if people aren't up for it and the like. But you're right. It is really fundamentally, you know, for the woman. You know, there's a French fellow in our shul who laughs because, you know, this is the benefit of knowing multiple languages. So he says, in French, you don't say, we're having a baby. You say, my wife is having a baby. He said, when he came to America, he started laughing. He said, what do you mean, we're having a baby? What exactly is my contribution? I mean, you know, I'm very supportive. You know, Baruch Hashem, they have 6 children, beautiful children. But, you know, I told him that I agreed with him. I think that she should get the credit and she should get the Birkas HaGomel. And that's the way it played out. So he liked that very much and he brought his own sources. So Vika Deman, the Ra'ah says, the Yai of Time Mishum de Kriyas HaTorah, Time Alon Mimakom Rabbanan, a very fascinating suggestion. The Gemara said you should have rabbis there. So what's like in lieu of rabbis? A public teaching of Torah, the way the Rav used to like to say, Berchas HaTorah and Kriyas HaTorah. So it's such an interesting way that the Ra'ah, you know, is packaging you know, the minhag. Inami denichla alma de mavid mitzvah ki asu leoduye al nisai. Another very beautiful suggestion. Time permitting, I want to come back to this suggestion as well, which is that it's, you know, good to do a mitzvah when a person is being moda on nisim, when they give thanks for the great miracles that are in our lives. So to do a mitzvah is maybe the greatest way of so doing, because, you know, when Hashem extends himself for us, so it's important for us to reciprocate by, you know, showing loyalty to Hashem. So there is a comment here of Rashi, just a very important practical comment that I want to get to. So Rashi says, trichin lahodos, three small words in Rashi, but, you know, they have great, great halachic significance. So Rashi says, kishayotzin min hasakana. The idea of the Korban Todah, and then, you know, in our generation, Berchas HaGomel, but our main focus can be on the Korban Todah, is there really has to have been a sakana. If you actually go to Rashi al HaTorah, I've argued many times, it's that it's really Rashi l'shita. So because Rashi al HaTorah here, this is the fourth source, imal todah yakrivenu, imal dvar hodal nes shenaselo. Right? You experienced a miraculous salvation. You were really, the implication is, in danger. Kigon, and then Rashi uses this word kigon, right? That it's not just these four examples, but if you would find an example where somebody would really be, you know, becheska sakana, they would really be in danger. So the idea would be to, you know, bring a korban todah. The reason that this is so important practically is, you know, there are so many different practices with respect to, today we don't have the privilege again of bringing korban todah, but reciting birchas hagomel. Let's say on flights, should people recite, you know, a birchas hagomel after taking a flight, a domestic flight, an international flight? When do you recite it? On the way there, on the way back? Rav Moshe's, you know, famous distinction between Eretz Yisrael and every other place, both legs of the trip, one leg of the trip. So those who follow the tradition of the Rav, so I don't know that the Rav pointed it out, but I always said that this Rashi was a basis in the Rishonim for the Rav's idea. So the Rav felt that there really had to be a sakana, that it's not enough to say, well, when you're in an airplane, you know, you are crossing over the ocean, or you could be flying the Sahara Desert, right? Like, you know, you could do the flight tracker and see, oh, I'm over the Sahara Desert right now. Does that make me, you know, miyardei hayam or miyohochei midbaros? So the question is, are you really in a sakana? And statistically, we all know, despite Boeing's many problems, that we're not in a sakana. We're not. So the Rav was not one to recite Birchas HaGomel on air travel, which he did, you know, weekly. Again, there are those who want to make distinctions between domestic travel, where you're not necessarily over an ocean. It's like a formalist perspective. Rav Moshe had a very interesting idea. Rav Moshe thought that the statistics are what the statistics are, but you are kind of in a sakana in the following way, that it is something unnatural, as he puts it, about flying through the air. Not if you're a bird, but if you're a human. And that given, you know, if you would remove the airplane, you know, it would be an immediate and irreconcilable problem for all of those who were on board. So he argues that, you know, air travel is different than car travel, even if statistically, you know, car travel, I think, is much more dangerous. But the point is, if you take the car away, so then you're just stranded on the side of the road. If you take the airplane away, you have a very serious problem. So the idea of sakana, I think, whatever one does with it practically, and everybody should just keep their minhagim, you know, and not, you know, start messing around with what's working. But the idea of sakana is a very important one. And I think it's the animating idea of the Korban Todah and really the key. If you take a look here, let me just, again, a second, share my screen. I wanted to share some words from the Rambam with your permission. There is a debate as to what the, you know, ordering should be. In Tehillim, it's presented one way, in the Gemara, it's presented another way. Tosfos thinks, very famous comment here of Tosfos, that, you know, the distinction in Tehillim versus the Gemara is based on what's either more frequent versus what's more dangerous. But the, you know, like the piece in the Rambam, which is the most fascinating, is that he doesn't follow either order, not the order of the Mizmor Tehillim and not the order of the Gemara. He has his own, he has his own idea. So I wanted to read the Rambam and just make an observation, which will serve as like a good point of departure for the next level of analysis. So the Rambam writes here, Arba Tzrichin Lahodos. Chola Shenisrape. He starts with the Chola. Again, you don't find that in Tehillim Kuf Zayin or in the Gemara. Chavu Sheyatza Mibeis HaSurim. Yordei Hayam Kishe Alu. Right, you have to get out of the seas. V'holchei Derachim Kishe Yagiu LiYishuv. So Rambam makes a very subtle change, which actually is not very well documented by the Nosei Kelim. It's really interesting. The primary and classical Nosei Kelim do not note this point. But Holchei Drachim is not what we find either in the Gemara or in Tehillim. It says Holchei Midbarios. The Rambam is already signaling that he doesn't really believe that it's about these four formal categories. Holchei Drachim. The Chola Shenisrape. So for the Rambam, it's all about having this sakana and then rediscovering security. You were, God forbid, held hostage, and now you're Yatza Mibeis HaSurim. You were gravely ill, now you're Nisrape. You were in the seas, Ksha'alu. You were on the roads, Ksha'agiu LiYishuv. Utsrich in the Rambam says, Lahodos Bifnei Asara. And this, you know, confession, thanksgiving, should be done publicly. Ushnayim mehem chachamim. So the Rambam goes and he rules in that fashion. Shenamar v'yiromimu b'kalam v'moshav zakenim yihalu. V'keitzad moda, v'keitzad mevarech. So the Rambam says there are two different elements. One of them is the bracha in today's day and age, brachas hagomel. But then there's the moda. So omeid b'neihem. Umivarech, the Amida standing, you know, again, like one is actually giving testimony to the divine salvation. The Omeid Beinehem isn't just the prod, it's not just a detail like what position you have to be in, but the Rambam says that's an intrinsic part of the Maisa Hoda'ah, of the giving thanks. And you say, Baruch Atah Hashem Bukenim Echolam HaGomel, this is the Girsa that we referred to before, L'chayavim Tovos Shigimalani Kol Tov. I was chayav, and God gave me a pardon. The cholashom in omrim, and then there's a role for everybody there to say, shegemal chatov, hu yigmal chasela. God, who is good to you, should continue, you know, to be good to you in this fashion. So, what the Rambam is saying is very, very clear. And also very, very fundamental. When it comes to the Korban Todah, which, again, has, in the modern context, been replaced by Berachas HaGomel, the person stands at attention and must publicly declare, and especially in front of representatives of Torah, a sense of the idea that this sakana that came upon him could have, and maybe, by all rights, would have been the end. And that God rescued the person from the jaws of certain demise. Tzarech lamod, lahodos bifnei asara, the public nature of the testimony and the confession. And then everybody there responds that God, who was good to you, should continue to be good to you. It's a moment where the individual who's modeh u'mevarech takes stock of his or her mortality. Which is why, Shari, to your point, it's so important that it be the person themselves. Yes, we have a loophole in the halacha, and it's an important loophole here, ishto kegufo, that we, you know, believe that, you know, the spouses can sometimes be like one extended person. But that experience itself is meant to be a transformative one, confronting the abyss, the possible end, and confronting it as one who is chayav, I think is such an important and really vital statement regarding, you know, a person's mentality in that moment. And so the Rambam, like you said, it's not a midbar per se, but anything where there would be, you know, great danger along the drachim, you know, would fit exactly into this paradigm. I want to, oh yeah, Jerry, please.
I just ask a question. So it appears to me that the qualification for the bracha to a certain extent is that there is a danger, but it's not a willful danger. It's not like you purposely, you know, going into a risky situation.
Right.
Sometimes, I guess, if you have to take a travel, I guess, in the midbar, that is, but you're not looking for the risk. What about somebody who decides to travel up Mount Everest or some other very definitely dangerous climb?
Right.
And they come down and they're fine. Do they have to say Brukat HaGomel? I mean, they bring the risk onto themselves.
Right. Right. And that's a very important question, because in so doing, they may have actually violated a prohibition. People are not, because you're not really supposed to put yourself in unnecessarily dangerous situations. So that's a very, very good question. I'd have to look into that. I haven't encountered that. Is that what happens if a person clearly violates an Isser in the process? One thing that I can tell you, which is sort of the in-between case, is let's say you're in Sahel.
Yeah.
Right. So there you didn't, you know, you sort of, on some level you chose it, but it's a mitzvah to do. So that would be a Birkas HaGomel, right? In terms of the sakana, a person comes out of a life-threatening situation. So that's a very important idea. So if an Isser was involved, I have to look to that, because there are sometimes situations where we say Ein Zeh Mevarech Al HaMinoyed, that it's considered to be a very disrespectful thing to do because you created, and on the other hand, you were still safe. That's a really good question. But Jared, let me look into that. It's a really, really, really interesting question.
And there are a lot of cases like that. Someone who goes skydiving. There are so many instances where people do it for the sport, but they really have a very strong chance of hurting themselves.
Right. I don't know anything about the particular case of skydiving. Could be that it's very dangerous. Could be that it's not. I just don't know. You know, but climbing Mount Everest for sure is. There's a ridiculous number of people who die doing that.
Yes.
You see that all the time. I don't know what percentage is, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's 10%. It's some crazy number, you know. It's like playing Russian roulette. It's insane. Yeah, Shari, go ahead.
Two questions. How do you translate Gomel?
Bestow.
Bestow. Like, okay, very biblical. Okay. And then why is this bracha need to be done with Sibur with a minion? Why can't it be something that you say like a Tefillat HaDerech?
Right. So I was arguing that it's like a public confession in that way. And the next piece that I was going to say is that maybe it's even in that way, like there's a principle of Vishaftu Ha'eda V'Yitzilu Ha'eda, and I wonder to what extent if the 10 who are present, not even including the, you know, the Moshav Zakenim, the two Talmidei Chachamim, anytime there's a capital case, so there are 10 people who have to argue in favor of conviction, and 10 people who have to argue in favor of exoneration. I've always wondered in terms of the 10 people who are there for the exoneration, you know, here, Gomel L'chayavim Tovos, you were really chayav, you know, you shouldn't have been able to survive to see another day. How much they're like, you know, v'hitzilu ha'eda. They represent the exonerating best. And that's an image that I've thought about a lot, and I think it is very important. And remember, they're not just passively involved, but they're active members, right? They have this response, you know, that Hashem, who was good and bestowed kindness upon you, should continue to do so. You know, huyugmalcha tov sela. So what I want to try to do now is to share the perspective of the Netziv, and then hopefully come back and reflect on a lot of the questions that we presented towards the beginning. So this really is a very, very favorite passage of mine about the Korban Todah, and I hope you find it as meaningful as I do, and I think it relates to many of the issues that we raised. So the Netziv writes, right here, Al-Chalos Lechem Chametz Yakriv Korbano, Mashmaus HaMikra, D'tachos HaKorban Hu Chalos Lechem Chametz. So like the Ramban observed, but the Ramban observed it just in terms of the quantity, just how big the amount of chametz was, So the Leimek Dover says, Al chalots lechem chametz yakriv korbano. It sounds like the chametz, even though it's only 10 of the 40 loaves of bread, it sounds like that's really the essence. Umishum zeh mefarish ad hamikra al zebach todas shlamav. This is a shlamim, but it's a todas shlamim. Mishum hachi lechem chametzu, ikar mishum zebach todas shlamav. Why? Va'inyan de tachlis toda, sheba al hanes, kedei lesaper chazdei Hashem shegamal alav. The whole point of the korban toda is to publicize, Shari, to your question, God's goodness to you. So if we have a mitzvah coming up in less than a month of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, Lesaper Chaste Hashem Shegamal Alav, to publicly speak of God's goodness. Umitam Zeh Riba Kasev Belechem, and that's why there's so much bread. You're going to need to invite a lot of people. So the modern iteration of Birchas HaGomel is you need at least, 10. Okay? But the public nature, the Netziv thinks, was baked in, forgive me, to the Korban Todah itself. Ve'in in the Tachas Todah, Shabal HaNeis, k'dei l'saper chazdei HaShem shegam alav. V'mitam zeh riba akasav balechem, u'miyeit bizman achilas todah mikol shlamim. That's why there's less time. Because if there's less time and more food, what does that mean? Little time, lots of food, got to invite people over. Everybody knows that. Okay? So, Hainu Kadesh, Yea Marbe Reyim Masuda Achas Biyomakrav, Aviyu Sipur Hanes, Lefi Rov Hanashim, Varba Chalos the Kohanim, Shehein Hema, Tamidei Chachamim. The Kohanim here play the role that would later be occupied the Tamidei Chachamim, because they're going to get a portion. Vim Kain Haikar Achila Ulechem Chametz, Dematzu Lechem Oni. And this is why we break the rule. Normally, like it comes to baking, I mentioned in the name of my esteemed wife, baking you don't trifle around, and the Torah says you don't trifle around either. Lo se'afeh chametz, ki chol soror v'chol devash, lo saktiri menu yishel la'ashem. And yet here, you dafka make it chametz because you want to make the su'udah as appealing as possible, to be able to tell the stories of God's, greatness to you, and his goodness, and his generosity. V'hainu demesayim ta'am shalechem chametz ikar mishum shuzevach todas shlamav todal shlomo b'ma shenechlatz mitzara. So I think here, what the Haimek Davar is doing is effectively answering all of our questions. Why so much bread? Because it's a public meal. Why chametz? Because that makes the meal, much, more appealing. It enhances that part of it. And the meal isn't just a celebration. The meal is the point, because the whole idea of the Korban Todah, and that's why for him you have less time. For me, I want to highlight the fact that it adds a dimension of Kedusha. It becomes more like Kadshei Kadashim. But the whole point of the Korban Todah is that when one experiences a salvation, one is obligated, L'saper Nifloosav. Say, I was subjected to something harrowing, and maybe I wouldn't have chosen that. But in the end, I have to look at it from the perspective of thank God for my life. Thank God for my life. Literally, God took me, who was mechuyav, and extricated me from that situation. That's not an optional korban in Judaism. That's a required korban. We're obligated to take that perspective. Doesn't mean that we would wish upon anybody to have to go through difficult times just so that they could offer a korban todah on the back end. That's certainly not what I'm saying. But that once a person has that experience, we cherish life so much that being able to be granted life is itself, something that we never, ever, ever take for granted and celebrate publicly and acknowledge that it really didn't have to be that way. And by God's grace, it ended up exactly in that fashion. That's enough to overcome the chametz rule, and that's enough to be marbe, with these chalos. It's enough to mandate the korban. And from my point of view, the time frame isn't only to require people, essentially to invite people, but the time frame is in essence about elevating what would be kachim kalim to kachim kadashim. That this experience of thanking God really is a sacred one. It's something which is, so So important. I wanted to just read in conclusion a beautiful testimony that I got. From one of the, see, the guy's in my shul is a gastroenterologist, and his partner lives in Englewood and just on a mission this week. So his partner, right, sent him, the guy in my shul, who then sent me, the rabbi, this beautiful letter that I wanted to read to you from, because I think this is the essence of Korban Todah. So the doctor on the mission is just visiting. So he's in Tel HaShomer. So Tel HaShomer and Sheba are the two main hospitals right now in terms of where the long-term, you know, recovery is going on. Okay, so another soldier who spoke to us was Mendel, 21, born in Chicago. His family immigrated to Israel when he was 7. Okay. He was injured on December 12th as his unit crossed an open space in North Gaza. His unit was hit by an RPG. His friend standing next to him was instantly killed. Rahman al-Islam. Mendel has shrapnel injuries to his arms and leg. I was lying face down on the ground, bleeding out. They continued to shoot at us, and I thought the next bullet would be in my head. I started thinking about what my parents would go through if I didn't come back. My commander was also hit multiple times, but he came over to me and started putting tourniquets on me. Very quickly, soldiers from 669. 669 is a special Air Force unit that evacuates in the injured soldiers. Came in and evacuated me by helicopter. So Mendel says to the group, as he showed us his extensive scars on his arms and stomach and nerve damage to his left hand, he said, quote, "I am alive. All the rest is a bonus." That's the Korban Todah. Right? So, Mendel could focus on a lot of different things, and who would blame him, right? But the halachic perspective is that life is so valuable. Life is that when a person has this experience, and he's a cholosh in Isrape, or he's a chavosh yatsa mi beis hasurin, or he's, holchei drachim, to quote from the Rambam, or he's, yordei hayam sha'alu, and he's extracted from this, grave danger with his life or her life. And things really could have been different. And maybe by all rights, they should have been different. Hagomel l'chayavim tovos. So the Torah says, you have to bring a Korban Todah. And it's not a private experience anymore. Of course, your experience is sacred and personal and private. But in terms of acknowledging, divine grace, this is your own Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is your own personal salvation. Bikahal am uvimoshav zakenim. It's done, in the most public way. And hence the Nitziv scheme, of creating a Korban Todah that is, the most public and for everybody. And in that respect, I think it's so beautiful what the Ra'ah had suggested. So the Ra'ah says, so what's the minhag of Kriyas HaTorah? So it could be that the Kriyas HaTorah is like taking the place of the Talmidei Chachamim, that there should be a Torah presence. But it also could be that the ideal way to celebrate one's survival and salvation is in the context of a mitzvah. And I love that idea. Boy, do I love that idea. It's Kedushas HaChayim. I'm alive, and I'm going to use my life for the best. There may be some things that I can't do right now, because maybe I'm a cholosh in Isrape and my life has changed. Mendel's life has changed. Many of the soldiers' lives have changed. But there's life. And there's an opportunity to sanctify that. In so many different mitzvos, a person, can and will do. So I think, the Korban Todah in that way, like I say, it's still fundamentally Ishlamim. It's still fundamentally Kachim Kalim. But in terms of the meal, that public meal, it takes on dimensions of Kadshei Kadashim, because the substance of that meal is no party. I mean, hopefully people are having a good time. But the substance of that meal is something truly sacred, because it's about making that declaration that this life which has been granted to me, not just chasadim tovim, but chayavim tovim, right? I didn't necessarily deserve it, but Hashem gave me my life back. I'm going to do something really, really positive with this. I recognize and cherish the opportunities that I have. And rather than, you know, focus on the negativity, getting into the situation in the first place, the overwhelming emphasis has to be the extraction. Chola shenisrape, chavosh yatza mibeis asurim, yardei hayam sha'alu holchei drachim kshehigiyu. And the moment of arrival, the clarity of that moment, the beauty of life, you know, is something that we don't take for granted, because it's always an opportunity for a dvar mitzvah, for something meaningful. And I think that that is a korban for our moment. I'll just conclude with this. This is obviously a personal korban. Nobody wanted October 7th. Nobody wanted the war that followed. But for Klal Yisrael, God willing, when we emerge on the other side of this, it'll be a moment for a korban toda, for a moment of great thanksgiving for our survival, our national survival. We'll make every effort, I know, to be misaper niflos Hashem, to tell the glory of God in, you know, saving us from these genocidal maniacs that, you know, we're still, of course, in the middle of fighting, and to consecrate on a national level our lives, not just to be what they were before October 7th, but something much better, something much more unified, something, you know, where we have a much greater sense of the needs of Am Yisrael. I look forward, and it should come soon, I look forward to being able, not just to talk about it, but I look forward to being able to have a national Korban Toda, you know, at the conclusion of this very challenging period. So with that, I want to wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos.